welcome to today's edition of Worcester Note Talking News, brought to you by Worcester News and Equipment for the Blind, with permission of the Worcester News, and recorded on Thursday the 28th of March here at Colin Chance House. I'm Evelyn Brock, editor for this edition. With me to read for you are Moira Lowe, Penny Welford and Richard Pugh. Our recording engineer is Alex Gwynn, and we are, as usual, ably supported by the admin team, led by Carol Hartle. A warm welcome to all our readers, especially new ones. I do hope you enjoy this week's offering. In addition to news items, you'll hear some useful telephone numbers, birthdays, and thought for the week. Nowadays, those telephone numbers and the obituaries are placed following the closing music. So if you wish to hear them, please stay tuned then. Also, in this edition, listen for a special report from our own roving reporter John Plush of the visit of Queen Camilla to distribute the Maundy money at Worcester Cathedral, which took place the day of this recording. So it's hot off the press. Don't forget that recordings are usually available as podcasts, but at present talking books are not available on memory sticks, but rather on CDs and tapes. Also, do let us know your birthdays so that we can greet you specially when the time comes. This service is free to users, but if you would like to make a voluntary donation, it can be sent to Colin Chance House, Wilds Lane, Worcester, WR5 1DA. We do like hearing from you, and a message can be left on our answer phone. That's Worcester 01905 767766, or you could add a note to your wallet. If there's a problem with any aspect of your receiving recordings, please use the answer phone facility on the number I've just given and leave a message to that effect. I'm also asked to remind you to return newspaper memory sticks promptly to facilitate a smooth operation and use of resources. As from now, you will only receive 2 weeks of recordings. If neither of these are returned, you will not receive further recordings. If you're unwell or have a problem, do please ring us on the telephone number I've just given and leave a message. Thank you. Right, so we'll start and I'll ask Penny to read the birthdays.
Hello. We have three birthdays coming up this week. We have Derek Nickling on the 5th of April, David Perks on the 6th of April, and Jenny Barson on the 6th of April too. We wish them all a very happy birthday.
And now, Moira, please, would you read us the thought for the week?
Okay, so this comes from Luke chapter 24, verses 1 to 6. On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, the women took the spices they had prepared and went to the tomb. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb, but when they entered, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. While they were wondering about this, suddenly two men in clothes that gleamed like lightning stood beside them. In their fright, the women bowed down with their faces to the ground. But the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here, he has risen."
Thank you. Well, now to the first of our headline articles.
The headline article for Friday, March the 22nd is dramatic, "Seconds from Death." And there's a picture of a man in a high-vis jacket. And the next line says, "Postie's lucky escape from after tree collapse." The luckiest postman alive cheated death when a giant tree fell down right in front of him and nearly took out a postbox. Adam Wilson, in the picture, was seconds from disaster when the tree fell down in Ripon Road in Ronkswood while he was out on his rounds. The 40-year-old dad of three from Warnden, who described himself as the luckiest postman alive, said in another 15 seconds he would have been standing directly underneath the falling tree. The huge branches struck the postbox in Ripon Road when it fell on Thursday morning, March 21st. It was only a mix-up with the mail, which meant he had to double back towards nearby Newtown Road, stopping him from being squashed as the tree fell. Once it had fallen, the colossal tree completely blocked Ripon Road near the junction with Canterbury Road, as tree surgeons used chainsaws and a JCB with a grab arm to clear the road. Mr. Wilson, who has only been in the job 12 weeks, was crossing Canterbury Road towards the postbox when he saw and heard the tree come down with a boom. I feel like I had a lucky escape. I've had two people tell me to go and buy a lottery ticket, and a Chinese lady told me I was very lucky. If there had not been that mix-up with the mail, the tree would have got me. Matt Reynolds was passing by when the tree fell. He said, "Me and my dad had just pulled off from the traffic lights heading towards town along Newtown Road when we heard this almighty crash. You could hear the roots rip out of the ground. We were just lucky that we were not under the tree when it collapsed, but we were very close to it when it happened, a little too close for our liking." At one stage, a police car on blue lights was parked across the junction. The tree also came near to gas supply equipment on the grass, and an engineer checked it was safe before contractors from KW Bolton tree care specialists moved in to clear the road. Worcestershire County Council confirmed they arranged for an arboricultural contractor to remove the tree. Pamela May, 75, of Durham Road, Ronkswood, regularly sits on the wooden fence in Ripon Road, which was demolished by the falling tree. John Barris, 57, of Ripon Road, said, "A truck backed into it. This happens regularly. It gets hit around twice a month. It's a shame. It's one more tree gone. Coppicing might have helped. I just wish I had a wood burner," he said. He said other trees had been taken away to make way for the bus lane in Newtown Road.
Okay, my headline is for the weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Laundry up in flames. The quick actions of firefighters stopped a major fire in a laundry from spreading to neighbouring businesses as the blaze threatened to rage out of control. The fire broke out at the Priory Dry Cleaners and Laundry at an Ever Oak Industrial Estate, Bromyard Road, St John's, Worcester, in the early hours of yesterday morning. So that was Friday morning. At the height of the incident, seven fire engines and around 40 firefighters were at the scene of the fire with an aerial ladder platform used to quell the flames after the 999 call came in. The response of Hereford and Worcester Fire and Rescue Service meant the fire did not spread to neighbouring businesses, including Worcester Bowl and Stonemasons of Worcester. At the height of the incident, Bromyard Road was closed by police and a caution was placed on train services because the fire was so close to the railway line as train drivers were warned to slow down. Dramatic photos showed firefighters using an aerial ladder platform to douse the flames from above, spraying water into the roof with the flames creating a hole and deforming the panels. A fire service spokesman said, "Seven crews, two from Worcester, two from Malvern and one each from Droitwich and Bromyard and Bromsgrove fire stations, plus the incident command unit from Wyre Forest, the aerial platform from Worcester, the water carrier from Leinster and the environmental protection unit from Tenbury Wells were called at 4:50 a.m. to smoke issuing at businesses in Bromyard Road, Worcester. A single-storey building around 100 metres by 60 metres was well alight, including mezzanine flooring. The incident was sectorised with the fire fought by four firefighters wearing breathing apparatus using two hose reel jets and two main jets with the aerial ladder platform augmented from street mains. Bromyard Road has been closed by police who are also in attendance. There are no casualties. The gas supply has been isolated and the incident remains ongoing, although she's currently scaling back. Dan Wiley, station commander, was on scene and said getting on top of a fire early was really important. Meanwhile, fire investigators were looking into finding the cause of the blaze and would likely be at the scene all day, he added. We will use thermal imaging to identify any hot spots. Firefighters stopped the fire from spreading to other businesses. The fire was successfully contained, he said. An update provided by the fire service later in the morning revealed the incident was being scaled back. He said, at the moment, the incident is scaling back with two hose reel jets and the aerial ladder platform, along with two triple extension ladders in use to dampen down an area on the mezzanine floor. Tom Adams, owner of Stonemasons of Worcester, a neighbouring business on the industrial estate, said, they got here early enough to contain it and stop it spreading. The car park was carnage this morning. We were open as usual, as normal. Hayley Johnson, the area manager of Worcester Bowl, run by Disco Bowl, said they were not currently open because the electric and water were switched off, but she hoped it could be open later in the day. Mrs. Johnson, speaking on Friday, said, the building isn't damaged. We will open as soon as the electricity is back on. We have been quite lucky the fire did not spread through to us and we have gone undamaged. It could have been a lot worse. But we have no electricity and water at the moment. People can still contact the venue and we are still taking potential bookings for tonight. They had some bookings in the morning which were offered a full refund. She added that customers had been very supportive. The thickness of the wall helped prevent the fire from spreading, firefighters confirmed. We have attempted to make contact with Priory dry cleaners.
And suspecting some sort of editorial theme going on here, the front page of Monday's Worcester News shows a chip shop on fire with the headline Chip Shop Inferno. Residents forced to evacuate flats. People were forced to evacuate their flats as neighbours watched their favourite chip shop go up in flames. Those living above Monarch Drive Chippy were forced to evacuate their homes on Friday after the chip shop caught fire during the busiest time of the week. Residents said the ceiling of the Chippy had completely come through and black smoke was everywhere. At around 7 p.m, neighbours were alerted to a large plume of black smoke billowing down Monarch Drive. The customers who had previously been waiting for their chips were left huddled in the car park as fire crews tackled the blaze. According to neighbours, everyone managed to get out safely. One said, "It was bad. We went and gave hats and coats to the owners so they wouldn't get cold. They said they tried to put a fire blanket on it, but it just blew off." They were distraught after all they had gone through as well with COVID. The ceiling completely came through. Firefighters were putting out the flames and you could see black flames coming from the roof. They had evacuated the top so everyone got out. One neighbour said Monarch Drive Chippy was a fantastic chippy. "It has been a really good chippy. These people are fantastic and now I will have to go miles to get my fish and chips," he said. We've had the laundrette on fire last year and now the chippy. Debris from the glass is still on the pavement. Last night the glass exploding was a bit worrying. Another resident said they could not believe their eyes when they saw the chippy on fire. She said she could imagine it frightened the life out of the people living in the above flats. An eyewitness at the scene, when the chip shop caught fire, added, "It happened so fast. It just went up within seconds. It was a fryer. The ceiling peeled off and there was black smoke everywhere. Extensive smoke damage can be seen at the front of the business, with glass from the chip shop windows swept into a pile on the pavement. The owners of the chip shop declined to comment for the time being. The cause of the fire has since been identified as being a faulty thermostat.
Now the headline article from Tuesday, March the 26th. Starbucks plan returns. And no, it's not Star Wars. Its drive-through proposals are, quotes, same as before. Controversial proposals for a drive-through coffee shop are to come back before planners, after the last scheme was withdrawn over protected trees, as one councillor called it Groundhog Day. The proposals for the drive-through restaurant at Elgar Retail Park in Blackpool in Worcester have been resubmitted after a previous application was withdrawn following widespread opposition. Trees to the west of the site were discovered to be protected, so the latest plan would move the drive-through on the site. The application by Legal and General Assurance was received by Worcester City Council on Tuesday, March the 19th, with a consultation launched the following day to close on April the 12th. A previous application had been due to come before Worcester City Council planners in January, but was withdrawn in December. This decision caused ripples of relief among residents who feared the coffee shop would add to traffic congestion, parking problems and noise complaints. The design of the unit reflects the standard format of a Starbucks coffee pod on retail parks throughout the country, says the new planning statement. The siting of the drive-through building has been changed, quotes, to enable the retention of the trees. But in all other matters, the proposal remains the same as previously submitted. According to the planning statement, the building will have glazing on the north and west sides and will be clad in Akoya wood with, quotes, a freestanding pergola over the payment and collection points. An outside seating plan will also feature. Warnden City Councillor Jill Dezera said, "This feels like Groundhog Day here. Developers are having another go at squeezing a drive-through restaurant into the same inadequate space in an already stretched car park and in the midst of severely congested roads. Unbelievable. Every objection from the last time, based on loss of amenity, still stands. I will be supporting my residents if they wish to object." The proposal, if given the green light, would result in the loss of 35 parking spaces, although 11 additional spaces will be provided elsewhere in the car park, an overall loss of 24 spaces. The opening hours will be between 6 a.m. and 8 p.m. Mondays to Sundays, including bank holidays. Edward Kimberley, a Labour candidate for Warnden, said, "I will be going around with the rest of the team in the near future to garner local opinion on the new Starbucks proposal. I won't be at all surprised if the answer that we come back with is the same as before, because it's pretty much exactly the same proposal."
The headline for Wednesday, March the 27th, there's also a picture of a collapsed wall. Broken, in quotes, homeowner faces £400,000 wall bill. Collapse burden placed on restaurant owner. A heartbroken homeowner who runs city businesses may be hit with a £400,000 bill over a collapsed wall after all the financial burden for the catastrophe was placed onto his shoulders. The retaining wall in Reservoir Lane in Rainbow Hill, Worcester, collapsed on Friday, February the 9th, sending rubble and mud spilling all over the road from Adam Giannotti's garden above. Even the sand pit where his children, aged 5 and 8, play, toppled down from the 12-metre-high wall into the road below. Fortunately, the family was in bed when the disaster struck in the early morning. Mr. Giannotti, owner of the Olive Branch Mediterranean Bistro and Wine Bar and Impasto, has already faced the trauma of knowing his children could have been killed when the wall collapsed. They were playing in the sandpit in the garden of his semi-detached house the night before disaster struck. Now, he says, he has been told by Worcestershire County Council and the insurers the collapsed wall could cost £400,000 to fix, and he will have to pay for it all himself. Traffic lights remain in place at the junction with Rainbow Hill, causing delays for drivers. No workmen were on the site on Friday. The site itself, which is fenced off, does not appear significantly different from when the collapse occurred. The 42-year-old dad of two said officially he had not had a quotation, but the figure mentioned to him was around £400,000, and he's been told the landslide was caused by heavy rain. That is the figure. The council has not taken responsibility. They have been useless. They are charging me for everything, including the traffic light system. I'm on my own, really. It's not great. The council should take responsibility, at least for clearing it up and making it safe. We have the correct insurance, but they're refusing to pay because they say the wall was inadequate. It's all on me. They should not be charging me for traffic lights. They should be helping me and encouraging me. Between the businesses, he employs 40 people, with any new venture creating an extra 10 jobs. The businesses have supported a number of charities and good causes, including St. Richard's Hospice in Worcester and Oscar Saxelby Lee during his leukemia battle. He understands the collapsed wall was from a castle, and he does not understand why he alone is responsible for a wall of that age. Mr. Giannotti, who says insurance paid out for a previous wall collapse nearby in 1998, said a GoFundMe page may have to be considered. I am a businessman, but it doesn't mean I have that sort of money, unfortunately. We were trying to open a third venue. That has now had to be put on hold, he said. They had been looking to open up a new venue in New Street in Worcester, and he is concerned he will have to sell everything to cover the costs. He added, "It's not my business money that can solve this. I have to find this money personally. Emotionally, this has broken me and my family. Their sandpit was on top of the wall. That's the only thing that has kept me going, knowing they're not dead." A previous wall collapse happened there in 1998 following flooding and took months to repair. A petition has been set up on change.org. Mr. Giannotti said he had not set it up himself, but he was aware of it. The online petition, started by Jeff Cruz, said the estimated repair bill is in the region of £400,000. And both the insurance company and the council have wiped their hands of the bill and passed it all on to the owner. Who on earth has that kind of money and could raise that kind of money? We, and so do many, feel that the council and the insurance company need to do something about this issue, and quickly, before the unsafe ground causes serious injury. A spokesperson for Worcestershire County Council said, "We acknowledge that a petition has been set up regarding the collapsed wall in Reservoir Lane. We will now consider the further information provided."
Okay, so I've got today's headline, which is "Down but Not Out." And this is continuing the story about the fire at the laundry, which I read before. The owner of a fire-ravaged laundry has vowed the business will bounce back from the catastrophic incident. Ishti Lone, the owner at Priory Dry Cleaners and Laundry in Everoak Industrial Estate, Bromyard Road in St John's, Worcester, has this week expressed his determination to recover from a catastrophic fire. The fire broke out in the early hours of Friday with 7 fire engines and an aerial ladder platform used to bring the inferno under control. Although the stench of smoke still hangs in the air and cages are full of charred laundry, everywhere is a hive of activity. A staff, described as one big family by the owner, worked together to get the business back on its feet. A gaping hole remains in the roof where the fire tore through the structure, testament to the inferno's ferocity. The blaze happened at around 4 a.m. The team are working to get the business up and running during what is considered the busy season in the laundry trade. Ishti hopes normal service can be resumed within 6 to 8 weeks at the business, which carries out domestic laundry but also bigger contracts on behalf of the police, the army, hotels and even the 2022 Commonwealth Games. The 52-year-old, who's been in the business for 30 years, said, "Our employees are passionate. They are ready to help, working with their employer day and night. I'm very proud of my staff. The employees are family and we treat them as family. People are working really hard. A lot of staff have been affected. We are trying our best. If you're not determined, if you let your emotions take over, you're not going to do the job right." Other laundries are also helping us, just as we help other laundries. Our customers have also been very understanding. Things are delayed, but they are okay with that. Mr. Lone and his team are particularly proud of the work they did during the Commonwealth Games in Birmingham in 2022, creating a system in which items were sent to them in sealed bags and returned in sealed bags, and not one bag was lost. They even created their own scanning system to ensure it was both secure and a success. "It was a great honour for us and a great honour for Worcester," said Mr. Lone. At the height of the incident, 7 fire engines and around 40 firefighters were at the scene of the fire, with an aerial ladder platform used to quell the flames after the 999 call came in. The response of Hereford and Worcester Fire and Rescue Service meant the fire did not spread to neighbouring businesses, including Worcester Bowl and Stonemasons of Worcester. And I'm going to leave the rest of the article because it's exactly the same as I read before.
Right, I'll now ask Richard for a sports article, please.
Yes, and it's the good news. The cricket season is almost upon us again. And under the headline, "Players Return for Pairs Pre-Season," we have the following article. "Worcestershire players are now all back in town as they build up to the 2024 season ramps up. Ethan Brooks, Ed Pollock, Josh Baker, Adam Finch and Gareth Roderick have all made sizeable contributions with their respective clubs. They'll join up with their other teammates at the start of the week as pre-season training began. The opening game of the pre-season, a 3 days game with Durham University, was cancelled on Thursday due to the weather. They will be hoping for a first run out in the 2 day fixture versus Hampshire at the Utility Bowl this morning, March the 25th. New signing Brooks hit 3 centuries for Prahran Cricket Club in the Victorian Premier Cricket Competition and also chipped in with useful wickets. Baker reached the 50-wicket mark for Northern District Cricket Club in the New South Wales Premier Cricket Tournament and helped them win the Limited Overs Cup with the 3-for-29 in the final against Western Suburbs. Pollock was a model of consistency in the same competition for St George Cricket Club with a top score of 116, and he scored freely throughout the winter. Finch showed that he's back to full fitness after his back injury, with several impressive performances for Sturt Cricket Club after linking up with them for the second half of the season. In South Africa, Roderick captained Greenpoint and led by example in the Western Province Premier Division with 633 runs in 15 innings at 48.70, with one century against Western Province Cricket Club and six fifties. For those youngsters especially, there's some lovely pictures of two of the members of this squad, but unfortunately neither of them has actually been identified. Worcestershire assistant head coach Kadir Ali said, "Whenever you spend a winter away, it can only benefit you with the cricket and from a personal life point of view as well. Being away, looking after yourself, making sure you are up to speed with your training and anything that is going on physically and mentally. A good winter is always a positive one. Getting away and playing outside can only do you good." For someone like Finchie, who was injured at the back end of the year, absolutely fantastic for him to get out and play some cricket. And hopefully, when he comes back, he'll be ready to go.
Thank you, Richard.
Well, now, on this day, events which happened on various times in history on the 28th of March. And this day's article is dominated by a large picture of Dr. Martin Luther King. And apparently it's to remind us that in 1965, on the March the 28th, nearly 25,000 people joined Dr. Martin Luther King on the steps of the state capitol of Montgomery, Alabama, to highlight black grievances. On this day last year, the Climate Change Committee said the UK was, quote, strikingly unprepared for the impacts of the climate crisis. Birthdays on March the 28th. Richard Stilgo, TV presenter, songwriter, lyricist and musician, 81. Gosh, is he really 81? Well, I suppose the policemen have looked very young for a long time, so I can't comment any further. Neil Kinnock, former Labour Party leader, 82. Mike Newell, film director, 82. Diane Wuvist, actress, 76. Chris Barry, actor, 64. Nasser Hussain, former cricketer, 56. And Julia Stiles, actress, 43. And on March the 28th in history, 1800, the Irish Parliament passed the Act of Union with England. 1854, the Crimean War began after the United Kingdom and France declared war on Russia. 1868, the 7th Earl of Cardigan, who led the charge of the Light Brigade to disaster at Balaclava in the Crimean War, died. He's now best remembered for the woolen garment named after him. March the 28th, 1930, Turkey's capital city, Constantinople, changed its name to Istanbul. 1939, on March the 28th, Madrid surrendered to Franco to end the Spanish Civil War. 1964, the pirate station Radio Caroline began transmitting from a ship in the North Sea. March the 28th, 1979, there was a radiation leak alert at Three Mile Island nuclear station near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, when the atomic core began to melt down. And 1991, a jury returned a verdict of accidental death at the end of an inquest into the deaths of 96 Liverpool football fans who died in the Hillsborough Stadium disaster in Sheffield in 1989. In December 2012, the High Court quashed the original verdicts and ordered fresh inquests. And now for a selection of the articles from all the days in the past week. And we start off, please, with Moira and her first article of choice.
Okay, so my story's headline is actually from today. It's Cafe's Lottery Boost. An open-door cafe where everyone is welcome has received a lottery grant so that it can continue at the heart of the community for years to come. The open-door cafe in Warnden in Worcester has secured its future for the next 2 years with a grant of £7,242 from the National Lottery. The grant has left everyone involved in running it and all those who attend each week delighted, says the Warnden's Labour councillor who brought the open-door cafe to the city. Councillor Jill Desiree, who founded the community lunch along with a team of volunteers, said the cafe had provided a social space with free food to residents for the past 18 months. Having started at St Wolstan's Church in Cranham Drive, it is well settled into its new home of the Warnden Hub on Shap Drive, serving over 50 meals a week. Birthdays, new jobs and even an engagement are celebrated with cards and homemade cake, recognising the close bonds of the Warnden community. The ethos is that everyone is made to feel welcome, said the councillor. Now that this significant sponsorship has been received by Worcester Community Action, or WCA, on behalf of the Open Door Cafe, the future of this popular event has been secured for some time to come. WCA is a registered charity that exists to support small volunteer groups with umbrella services such as bank accounts, procedures and DBS checks. It currently supports around 75 such organisations who would otherwise find themselves alone. Councillor Desiree said, "The volunteers and I are so very grateful to WCA for helping secure this money and to the National Lottery for the generous support. It's a huge boost and very much appreciated. Last Saturday was the last cafe before a short break for Easter. The menu was a special one in honour of the occasion. A fish pie or cauliflower bake, followed by cakes with an Easter theme. Everything was hoovered up. Fantastic. Menus and some recipes can be found at Desiree Warnden Facebook page. The Open Door Cafe returns on noon on April the 13th.
Yes, Tuesday, March 26th. Gas work disruption. Don't we know about it? There will be disruption for motorists with multi-way temporary traffic lights set to go in on a main road into Worcestershire for 3 weeks. Drivers are being advised to avoid the A38 Bath Road while Cadent continues its work to make gas mains safe in the area. And there's a picture showing the Norton Turn Junction with not a sign of any of the stuff they've already put there or the disruption they've already caused in the area, but still, never mind. Work will start on Monday, April the 8th, and is expected to take 3 weeks, reaching completion by Saturday, April the 27th. The firm said multi-way traffic lights will go in on Bath Road between the junctions of Buns Lane and Elm Green Close, mainly focused on the junctions at Norton Road and Barnshall Avenue. It has apologised to motorists for the disruption, but said work is needed to make the gas supply safe in the area. A spokesman for Cadent said traffic management will be required in order for our teams to complete their work safely and to protect members of the public for the duration of the scheme. Please leave additional time for your journeys or try to find alternative routes. There aren't any. We will make every effort to complete the work as efficiently as possible. St Peter's Parish Councillor John Renshaw said, the work has been progressing in stages over quite a long period of time. They're doing a few side streets at a time and working their way up Bath Road, which is a very busy road at certain times of the day. It's going to boil down to how well they manage the traffic while they are working on the road. Inevitably, work will cause a bit of inconvenience, particularly for residents who have lost gas supply during the day. But if systems have to be modernised, it's something we have to put up with.
Well, on a happier note, my first article is Easter fun to be had at National Trust sites. With children having broken up for the holidays, we have rounded up some of the National Trust properties near Worcester with fun Easter activities on offer. To help you plan your adventure, we found the places where you won't have to travel too far to find an Easter trail. Every Easter trail has been designed with families in mind, with a chocolate egg reward at the end. Grey Friars House and Garden, Friar Street, Worcester. An Easter trail for youngsters with a range of free activities within the free access area of the late medieval merchant's house and walled garden in the city centre. The trail will run between Tuesday, March the 26th and Monday, April the 1st, excluding Sunday, March the 31st. Trails which run from 10:45 a.m. till 3:30 p.m. on all days apart from Monday, April the 1st, when it's 11:15 a.m. until 2:30 p.m. Booking not needed. Croom, near High Green. There are Easter adventures at Croom with a trail for families. Booking isn't needed, but admission costs apply. Prices are £3 per trail, including an Easter trail sheet, bunny ears and dairy or vegan and free from chocolate egg. And I have to say that all the other venues also offer those advantages. Here at Croom, families can make their way along the trail, finding nature-inspired activities while exploring the beautiful gardens and parkland of Croom. Participants can spin the wheel and embrace nature's dares, unleash their creativity while they contribute to a collective Easter art masterpiece, and capture memorable moments in the giant bird's nest with a super-sized selfie board. Test your knowledge on the true or false egg path, hop along the rapid race course, follow the animal tracks on the footprint stepping stones, and engage your senses with a tactile interactive egg learning experience. The trail is from Sunday, April the 7th, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m, last entry at 4 p.m. And visitors can, of course, explore the beautiful gardens and parkland of Croom. Booking's not needed at all. Hanbury Hall, Droitwich Spa, Worcestershire. Visitors can take part in a family-friendly trail across the parkland, completing fun activities inspired by folklore and traditions. They can learn how to do Morris dancing, make music at the Wassailing Station, and challenge their family to a wheelbarrow race. Complete all 10 stations and collect your chocolate egg at the finish line. The trail runs from Sunday, April the 7th, from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. each day. Admission costs to Hanbury Hall apply, but booking is not needed. Brockhampton, near Bromyard, Herefordshire. Swoop into spring this Easter at Brockhampton. There'll be an Easter trail where people can find out more about the many species of birds that call the orchard their home, solving the puzzles and completing activities as they explore. Make your way along the train and find nature-inspired activities for the whole family. The trail runs until Sunday, April the 7th, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Visitors can explore the reimagined orchards and natural play areas at Brockhampton. Booking isn't needed, but admission to Brockhampton applies. And lastly, Croft Castle, near Leominster, Herefordshire. Discover the fascinating world of pollinators along Croft Castle's Easter holiday trail. Participants can make their way along the trail and find nature-inspired activities for the whole family. The trail takes place until Sunday, April the 7th, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m, offering visitors the chance to explore the walled garden and grounds at Croft Castle. Admission to the castle applies, but booking is not needed.
The next article comes from Monday's edition, Action Call on Empty Homes.
There are more than 700 empty homes in Worcester, council figures show. A report put before the City Council's Communities Committee shows there were 774 empty properties in the city as of January the 31st. 10 of those homes have been empty for more than a decade, while the vast majority, 689 homes, have been empty for less than 2 years. The report states there are many reasons why properties are empty, and some of these can be very challenging to bring back into use, especially where there are sentimental attachments to inherited properties. It says that other reasons include probate, homeowners being in care homes, properties awaiting sale, and DIY refurbishments. Councillor Tom Petrovsky said he would like to see an action plan drawn up on how to bring empty homes back into use. He said, "It's not necessarily a case of us being ambitious and trying to take over those properties. It's about sending a clear message to landlords who are sitting on assets and doing nothing because they can afford to do so." Councillor Petrovsky said tackling empty homes should be front and centre among the council's priorities. Councillor Elaine Wilmore said the idea was very worthy and necessary, but added, "We've all raised concerns about the standard of properties. We've all been in residence properties that you wouldn't house a dog in. I think if there is a priority, then it's about safety, the conditions that people are living in." Councillor Jill Desera said tackling empty homes is important, but not at the expense of safety when we have limited resources. The report says work to bring empty homes back into use is challenging and resource intensive. Letters of advice are sent to the owners of properties left empty for more than a year, and again after 2 years. Housing officers visit empty properties that have been reported to the council because of issues such as overgrown gardens or antisocial behaviour. And the council has a problem property group that meets to discuss ways of dealing with long-term empty premises.
Okay, my next story is Queen Visit Excitement. And there's a picture of Joan Jones, who works at Bygones of Worcester, where the window's full of bears and union flags. Red, white and blue flags and bunting will be seen across the city tomorrow as residents prepare to welcome a special royal visitor. Businesses and highway officials have been busy preparing for Queen Camilla's visit to Worcester Cathedral. As part of the Royal Maundy service, she will distribute gifts to exemplary individuals on behalf of the King. The last time royalty visited Worcester for the Royal Maundy service was in 1980, a day the Bygones of Worcester shop remembers all too well. Only Gabrielle Bullock officially opened the city store with her father the same day the late Queen Elizabeth II visited the faithful city. Miss Bullock has been busy dressing her window displays to hopefully catch Queen Camilla's attention. The event marks a special occasion in the business's history. "We opened the shop in 1980 on the day Queen Elizabeth and Philip came to visit Worcester. It was very exciting at the time, and I have lovely memories of the audiences and the lovely views of them from our windows. The Queen had even waved at us. It is very exciting to see Camilla. We are hoping for a wave, and Paddington in the window display will be waving too. It would be lovely for her to see the window display. The Queen is expected to arrive at Worcester Cathedral in the morning, and Worcestershire County Highways has been busy preparing the city roads. Fences have begun to be placed around the cathedral and across Deansway to accommodate the large crowds expected at tomorrow's events. Barriers have also appeared preventing access to Copenhagen Street car park, which is now closed to the general public. There will also be no access to the NCP car park at Cathedral Square. The event will mark the Queen's first public appearance since the Princess of Wales's cancer diagnosis. Tomorrow, ceremonial coins will be presented to 75 men and 75 women from around the country, including 39 people from the diocese covering Worcestershire and Dudley. The Maundy service will be held in the morning and attended by invited representatives from across the diocese and county, including the recipients and their guests. His Majesty the King has recorded especially the message of hope that will be broadcast at Worcester Cathedral.
It's Maundy Thursday 2024 and I'm standing on probably the windiest, most freezing street corner in Worcester, just opposite the cathedral, where Her Majesty Queen Camilla is due to distribute the Royal Maundy gifts on behalf of His Majesty King Charles. As you can probably hear, the otherwise good-natured crowd assembled with me on Cathedral Square are accompanied by a small but vociferous group of protesters. Cameron Walker, Royal Correspondent for GB News, is here with the camera crew to record this very noisy event.
Ever since King Charles's coronation, they've been very noisy and very active at any big royal event. They tend to be outnumbered by pro-monarchy supporters, but their voice is certainly being heard.
Generally, the people here in Cathedral Square are local supporters.
Well, I wanted to see what it was all about. I know she was coming.
Friends and relatives of supporters.
Well, I came because my wife wanted to come see Queen. That was basically why I've come down, yes. I suppose you don't really see the Maundy service in Worcester that often, do you?
Or slightly bemused foreign visitors.
I am from Turkey.
Turkish.
Yes. I love so much British people. Because very friendly, very nice, very smile.
Patiently clutching a bunch of tulips, which she's hoping to present to Queen Camilla, is young Grace with her mum. But we've heard that there may not be an opportunity to hand them over.
We were going to give them to the Queen, and then we found out she's not stopping. So I'm just going to, you know, show her that my appreciation, sort of.
Luckily for Grace, the Queen is not in her car, but instead going walkabout, and is actually approaching our windswept corner. Grace and her mum have crossed over to her, and I think she's given her the flowers, and she's having a conversation with the Queen. Just in the nick of time, too, as Camilla's car is right here to whisk her away. Grace, what did the Queen say to you?
She just said Happy Easter and thank you for the flowers. And she also said, don't eat too much chocolate. I don't think I'll follow by those rules, so.
Well, I think Grace will have a memory of today that lasts rather longer than any of this year's Easter eggs. This is John Plush for Worcester Talking News on a windy corner just outside the cathedral.
And some very good news story for the area is the headline on March the 25th, which says Centre's Grand Reopening, and it refers to the reopening of Laylock's Garden Centre. Shows a photograph of Hannah Waugh, director of Laylock's Garden Centre, cutting the red ribbon. Hundreds of eager shoppers flocked far and wide to the reopening of a family-run garden centre. Laylock's Garden Centre in Cotheridge near Worcester officially reopened on Saturday with live music, free goodies, children's entertainment and much more. It veiled its biggest new development since opening in the early 1980s after a sizeable investment of more than £500,000. Visitors entering the store were greeted not just by two fairies and a pirate on stilts, but by a new entrance. The first 100 visitors received a free goodie bag and the first 200 got free flowers. Jean Brownridge travelled from Hartlebury for the grand opening and said she had never expected it to be so busy. The new renovation is so much better and it's bigger, she said. We have not even made it all the way around yet, as there are so many people. Laylock's Garden Centre now has more than 650 square metres of retail space, an expanded restaurant and a newly developed plant and landscape area. The expansion will lead to the centre having more than 650 square metres of retail space. And the centre also promises a larger home and lifestyle department. Hannah Waugh, director of Laylock's Garden Centre, said, "It feels amazing. So many people came because this project has been in the pipeline for 2 years. I never thought we would get to this day. The team has been amazing and has really poured in all their efforts so we could not have been able to do it without them. Inside the store were long queues as hundreds of shoppers waited to buy goodies, try free tasters, and get their faces painted. Ms. Waugh said, "I was actually really worried no one would turn up. So I was very naive in thinking that. We were going to give out 100 free goodie bags at 11 a.m, but had to move it to 10:30 a.m. as people were queuing out of the door. They ran out in 10 minutes. I'm not sure whether they mean the customers or the goodie bags."
Thank you, Richard. And now some readers' letters from this week. So I'm going to kick off with the first one, which is from a Michael Key of Worcester. "I am an enthusiastic cyclist, so allow me to criticise the council's intention to remove the PSPO, Public Space Protection Order, from Worcester High Street. We have cyclists in the city who stick to the rules of the road, and we have a significant number of cyclists who don't. The removal of the PSPO sends the completely wrong message to the latter, which I'm afraid will only embolden the cyclists who don't obey the rules. Importantly, it will put off many people visiting the high street, which undermines the whole concept of a traffic-free pedestrian area."
The next letter comes from Barbara and Doug McNeil from Lower Broadheath. "Thank you, Worcestershire Royal. On Tuesday, January the 23rd, my husband unfortunately suffered a stroke and was taken to A&E. After a CT scan, which didn't reveal anything, I saw a consultant who arranged an MRI while he was in AMU. He was then transferred to the acute stroke unit, Bay 1. The kindness and care he received in there was first class. Nothing was too much trouble. I can never speak highly enough of them all. Also, a big thank you to the two ambulances and four paramedics who managed to get him down the stairs. All amazing. He is now home and doing really well. Thank you all. You deserve every penny you get and more. We are truly grateful."
Okay, so my letter is from Helen Taylor. "I've just been reading all about hatching projects in schools, a controversial concept taught in UK classrooms. What educational value these projects offer escapes me entirely. Hatching projects are used with the intention of teaching children about the reproductive cycle of animals. A fundamental element of this is the strong attachment birds form with their mother, who is completely absent during a hatching project. Eggs are kept in artificial incubators, hatching in noisy classrooms full of young children, but no mother. There's nothing too natural about that. I agree with the animal charities campaigning against these archaic hatching projects. They merely encourage children to view animals as disposable objects to be discarded once they have served a purpose. Our education system should help foster compassion towards all sentient life, not encourage such a disregard for it. Animals are tools, and how does the chicken reproductive system actually replicate ours anyway? Instead, there are so many wonderful educational tools available which teach children how reproductive cycles work in the natural world without simultaneously causing harm and perpetuating negative attitudes towards animals. Many schools place nesting boxes in their grounds with cameras inside so that students can view in amazement parent birds caring for their young. I remember all too well when little animals were kept in tiny cages in my classroom when I was a kid. I felt bad then, especially when the bullies were given the opportunity to take the animals home for the holidays. I felt then it was cruel to animals. But what makes it so much worse were the teachers that felt it was okay to perpetuate the cruelty in the name of education. It would be great if others were to reach out to their MPs and or Minister for Education, Gillian Keegan, about the hatching projects in schools especially if they first-hand experience of them. We need also to ask about the validity of these animal experiments nowadays. Surely all that's being taught is speciesism.
Beneath a photograph of a happy, smiling Jenny Kaup, who is the Chair of Trustees for St Richard's Hospice, we see the headline, Celebrating 40 Years of Hospice. This year marks a milestone for Worcester-based St Richard's Hospice. The charity is celebrating 40 years of offering free, expert specialist care and support to patients, their families and bereaved people in Worcestershire. From very small beginnings, the vision to set up a hospice in South Worcestershire became a reality in 1984. Since the hospice began, St Richard's has received more than 73,000 referrals for people to access their services for patients, their loved ones, carers and the bereaved. There are now 256 staff and 790 volunteers who make St Richard's what it is today. Everyone is invited to join a 40th anniversary service of celebration and thanksgiving at Worcester Cathedral on Wednesday, May the 1st at 7 p.m. The service will provide an opportunity for supporters and the wider community to celebrate the hospice and the four decades of dedicated care. Chair of Trustees Jenny Cowell said, "Everyone within our community should feel proud of their part in ensuring St Richard's has been able to grow and care for many thousands of people at a very difficult time in their lives. We remain an independent charity, and throughout the years our total focus has always been with the patient, their carers and the people they love. This remains our top priority as we look to the future." Mrs. Kaup continued, "As we celebrate, it is right to thank those founders who sat around a kitchen table in Droitwich and had the vision to build St Richard's for the benefit of local people. Their hopes and dreams have been achieved and surpassed, but we have always endeavoured to hold strong to their vision that love, care and compassion should be at the forefront of everything we do. St Richard's now offers a wide range of services for adults with a serious progressive illness and support for their loved ones and carers. Whether they need to receive 24-hour inpatient care, home care from our specialist community team, therapeutic activities in the Living Well Centre or benefit from our family support team, St Richard's is here to help." Chief Executive Mike Wilkerson said, "We have the most incredible and dedicated team of staff and volunteers at St Richard's who work tirelessly to make our care possible. We cannot thank our supporters enough for everything they do for St Richard's. It's only with their involvement and generosity that we can make a difference to so many people. We know life does not stand still, and St Richard's cannot stand still. We embrace the future and look forward to caring for life together for many more decades." For more information, visit www.strichards.org.uk. A brief history of St Richard's Hospice, which in 1984 began from the Droitwich home of one of its founders, Dr. Jenny Bullman. In 1985, moved to a terrace house in Woolcastle Street, Worcester. Then 1991, St Richard's moves to Rose Hill, a Georgian house in Worcester, and services expand. Officially opened by Diana, Princess of Wales, in 1992. 1995, the first St Richard's charity shop opens in Milcheapen Street, Worcester. The charity now has 17 shops. In 2004, the launch of a 5.2 million new hospice appeal. In 2006, first patients in the new hospice at Wildwood Drive. officially opened by His Royal Highness the Duke of Kent. In 2011, Snowdrop Community Centre opens, offering more family support. In 2014, expanded and redeveloped inpatient unit opens. 2020, Living Well Centre completed. And in 2024, the inpatient unit is to be upgraded.
My article is, I suppose, The Stuff of Dreams, Richard's Golden Find. A member of a Worcestershire metal detecting group found one of England's largest golden nuggets. Richard Brock, no relation to me, I might add, who is a member of Droitwich metal detector group KC Raleigh, found the expensive item on a farm in the Shropshire Hills. KC Raleigh decided to organise the expedition in Shropshire, and despite the group's experience, none of them had ever discovered an item like it. The metal lump has been named Hiro's Nugget and has been estimated to fetch £30,000 at auction. It's believed to be the biggest find of its kind on English soil. Mr. Brock said, "I have been detecting since 1989 and decided to join the trip, as a similar previous one to Australia was cancelled during the pandemic. So I drove 3.5 hours to Shropshire, and I actually arrived about an hour late, thinking I'd miss the action. Everyone there had all this up-to-date kit, and I bowled up with 3 old machines and one of them packed in there and then. At first, I just found a few rusty old tent pegs with this backup detector, which had a fading screen display. But after only 20 minutes of scanning the ground, I found this nugget buried about 5 or 6 inches down in the ground. I was perhaps a bit too honest and started showing people. Then all of a sudden I had swarms of other detectorists scanning the same area. Keith Campbell, who owns Droitwich Glass, and Adrian Harris created KC Raleigh 5 years ago to bring like-minded detectorists together. Mr. Campbell said, "If it weren't for KC Raleigh, then the event would not have happened and the nugget would not have been found. The find was the luck of the draw." Auctioneers Mullock Jones are offering the nugget for sale in a timed auction that began last weekend and runs until April the 1st, the estimated value being £30,000. Ben Jones of the auctioneers said, "We're expecting considerable interest in this item. It's a rare opportunity to acquire a stunning golden nugget. We're offering it as a single item to online bidders from Friday, March the 15th, ending at 6 p.m. on April the 1st.
The next article is from Saturday's edition, and there is a picture of Crunham Drive shops with the flats above. The headline is, "People are scared stiff of Yob Gang." Scared stiff shop workers and residents say they are being plagued by an aggressive drunken gang who try to start fights with innocent passers-by, but say police are nowhere to be seen. The gang have been fighting, arguing, smashing glass bottles outside Crunham Drive shops, as well as making lives a misery for staff and customers. One shop worker, who also lives in the street, said the antisocial behaviour has been a constant problem in the area, but police do not deal with it, despite being stationed close by. West Mercia Police said it has not received reports of antisocial behaviour. The shop assistant said, "There are a group of drunks standing by the shops, chucking drinks and glasses, They are paralytically drunk and starting on random people. There is always something going on, and it's becoming a regular thing. It's a joke around there. They are fighting, arguing, smashing glasses, and it's one particular group. Some people are scared stiff. A manager at Age UK said one of the youths had set on one of the customers last Saturday and estimated they were about 16 and 18 years of age. They were swearing outside the shop. Customers were frightened to come in. I haven't seen police on patrol for the last 2 weeks. They're never there when you need them. Another shop worker said that the incidents in the area had got considerably worse, calling the youths a bit of a nuisance. They added, "It affects all of us in some way. Police seem to walk past and turn a blind eye." Ward councillor Jill Desera said, "This sort of antisocial, threatening behaviour is appalling and must not be tolerated. If the police aren't seen to be acting, that might be due to their being so overstretched and under-resourced after so many years of cuts under successive Tory administrations. However, it is vital that the public continues to report all crimes and incidents to the police, or the evidence needed to increase resources isn't there. Now that I'm aware of this particular group, I'll inform the City Council youth team so that they can also be involved. I'm very sorry to hear about residents feeling so afraid in their home area, and I'll do what I can to resolve the issue." A West Mercia police spokesperson said, "This matter has not been reported to us, but we take any issues around antisocial behaviour seriously, and we will continue to work with shop owners to address such issues as and when they arise. We have a good working relationship with shop owners in the Warnden area, but anyone who witnesses antisocial behaviour should report it to the police via the Tell Us About section of our website or by calling 101. Alternatively, information can be shared anonymously with the independent charity Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111, or by visiting the Crime Stoppers website, giving information anonymously /crimestoppers.uk.org.
Okay, my headline is Pub Reopens Kitchen After Alex's Death. A pub which a popular landlord put his heart and soul into before his death has started serving food again. The Paul Pry had temporarily stopped serving food following the death of its landlord, Alex Pope, in January. The 39-year-old ran the popular pub in the Butts from 2017 and bought it in 2022, quickly turning it into one of the best loved pubs in the city. The Watering Hole revealed it would be reopening its kitchen again since Mr. Pope's death to serve its iconic Sunday roast again. Within an hour of posting the announcement, it was fully booked. A spokesman for the Paul Pry said they are thrilled that they can still provide food for the Worcester people in memory of Alex. It added, "We are very happy to be welcoming everyone back. We are overwhelmed with the support and encouragement we have received given the circumstances of why we had to temporarily stop. We were fully booked up on Easter Sunday within an hour of posting the announcement, so we are thrilled that we can do this for Alex, our brother and chef." The Paul Pry is renowned for its Sunday lunches, and many visitors have to book a table a month in advance. Alex Pope had previously told the Worcester News, "We are best known for our Sunday lunch. During the lockdown, it escalated into a crazy thing, and over Easter weekend, April 2022, we did over 200 deliveries. The 200-year-old pub, which is a Grade 2 listed building, went from strength to strength with Mr. Pope at the helm. The pub, based in the Butts, had closed following Mr. Pope's death and then reopened for customers to raise a glass to the landlord on January the 21st. It has since been open for drinks.
Whilst we're talking about pubs, underneath a photo of the Whitehall Inn in Rushwick, is the headline, House Plan for Pub Car Park is Refused. Planners have rejected a proposal to build a house in a village pub car park. Developers had wanted to build a three-bedroom house in the car park of the Whitehall Inn at Rushwick near Worcester. The proposal described the car park as a disused brownfield site that had no useful application, as at the time the pub was closed. But both Rushwick Parish Council and the Campaign for Real Ale said the car park would be needed if the pub reopened. We reported earlier last year that landlords Fiona and Ron Goldsby, who had run the Whitehall Inn since 2005, were retiring from the pub. A sign then appeared last summer saying the pub was under new ownership. It has now reopened, but on a smaller scale than it used to operate, with a cafe and a small bar area serving villagers from mid-morning through into the evening. Responding to the planning consultation in February, Mark Haslam of Campaign for Real Ale said, "The proposed loss of the pub's car park will have a major detrimental impact on the ability of the Whitehall to trade as a public house business. Historically, as a village inn that also relied on providing a dining venue and function space, the Campaign for Real Ale maintains it will struggle to trade in its traditional format with a significant loss of dedicated parking. This proposal, if approved, will likely result in the unnecessary and permanent loss of the Whitehall Inn." The Parish Council said parking on the section of Bransford Road near the pub is already an issue and safety risk. The loss of parking when the Whitehall Inn is open and or holding events will exacerbate the problem significantly, they said. Planning officers said the applicant had not provided evidence the pub could still operate with a reduced car park, and that the local assumption was that the business was to reopen in the beginning part of 2024. Refusing planning permission, they said the proposal would not represent sustainable development.
And that, I think, will be our last article for this evening, is about the M5. Motorway madness when M5 was built. It's quietly slipped into oblivion over the years, but one of the biggest civil engineering budget botch-up, use a stronger word if you like, of the second half of the 20th century occurred when they built the M5. And it was all down to local knowledge against central government intransigence. A new national road network had been announced in the 1930s. But World War II got in the way, and things didn't really start to happen until the late 40s. In August 1946, the Worcester Evening News and Times, this paper's predecessor, carried a report of a Worcestershire County Council meeting at which details of the new road were given. It was to extend from Lydiat Ash down to Strensham, where another length called the Ross Spur would head off towards Wales. The county council, the police, and particularly its county surveyor, the redoubtable H.M. Jock Thompson, made repeated representations for a dual three-lane standard motorway. However, the Ministry of Transport knew better, insisting a dual two-lane motorway would suffice at a cost of around £8 million. Apparently, the carriageways were also built to a lower overall width of 88 feet rather than 100 feet to reduce the loss of agricultural land. When it became necessary to widen the Worcestershire section of the M5 in the early 1990s, that cost £123 million. It all began on April the 8th, 1960, when Alderman E. Guy Bigwood, a bigwig of the County Council and chairman of its Highways and Bridges Committee, took a brand new spade
and in his suit and shiny shoes, dug a lump out of a farm field at Whittington on the outskirts of Worcester, thus cutting the M5's first sod. Alderman Bigwood's physical contribution didn't last long, but in very short order his token gesture was followed by a small army of men and machines as what was then known as the Birmingham to Bristol motorway cut a swathe through the county. While the obvious advantage of keeping the ever-increasing number of cars and lorries away from towns and cities could be appreciated, the impact of the massive project was to have consequences. At Warndon, an elderly farmer watched in dismay as surveyors pegged out the line of the new road straight through his favourite oak wood. When they'd gone, he took himself into the wood with his dog and a gun. He first shot his dog and then himself. He knew life would never be the same again. The 1946 report had announced access to the new road will be severely limited to intervals of between 5 and 10 miles, with existing roads acting as feeder points. Enthusiasm for the project was somewhat tempered by a query about whether councillors would get extra expenses for the increased meetings involved. 10 years later, in 1956, the County Council and Worcester City Council submitted a joint plea urging the Ministry of Transport to get on with it. Well, now we've come to the end of this evening's recording. I do hope you've enjoyed hearing all the articles and useful information. Many thanks to the team, Penny, Moira, Richard and Alex, and also Carol and the admin team who work so hard in the background. We hope you'll tune in for next week's offering. So for now, from us all, good night and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Useful telephone numbers. To contact fire, police or ambulance in an emergency, 999 or 112. For emergency social care calls to Worcestershire County Council, Worcester 768020. For non-urgent calls to Worcestershire County Council, Worcester 765765. To contact the Electricity National Grid in an emergency, dial 105. In the event of a power cut, ring 0800 917 7953. There's a priority service available for which you can register free of charge. For that service, 0800 032 8302. For non-urgent calls to the police, 101. Crime Stoppers, 0800 555 111. NHS Direct, 111. Domestic Abuse Helpline, 0800 980 331. Samaritans, 116. 123, a free phone number. Citizens Advice, 0808 278 7891. Age UK, Worcester 724 294. You've already had the telephone number for the Worcester Talking News here at Wilds Lane. Worcester Live for the Swan Theatre and Huntingdon Hall Box Office, Worcester 611427. Malvern Theatre's Box Office, 01684892277. Norbury Theatre Box Office, Worcester 770154. Number 8 Theatre in Pershore, 01386 555 488. Worcester Wheels number for transport, Worcester 450654
8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And Link Nurseries at Powick have a gardening session for visually impaired people on Friday mornings. Worcester 831-881 for more information. And now we move on to the obituaries, starting with Penny.
Pauline Dorothy Bullock of Holt Heath passed away peacefully in hospital on the 24th of February 2024, aged 79 years. The funeral service has taken place, but donations, if desired, for Cancer Research UK or Teckles Animal Sanctuary. Joan Florence Hunt, née Price, of Ombersley Road, Worcester, passed away on the 25th of February 2024. Beloved wife of the late Bert and dearly loved mother of Deborah, Joanne and the late Penny, and much loved mother-in-law, Nan and great Lan. Joan will be dearly missed by all who knew her. Funeral service was held earlier this week, followed by a private internment. Donations, if desired, for Midlands Air Ambulance.
Richard Ian Foote passed away peacefully on 28th of February 2024, aged 75 years. A celebration of life was held at St Andrew's Methodist Church on Wednesday the 27th of March. John Smith Glenn of Pentland Pershaw, formerly of Worcester, passed away peacefully at home with his family at his side on 8th of March 2024, aged 91 years. Funeral service at the Vale Crematorium, Fladbury, on Friday the 5th of April 2024 at 1 p.m. Family flowers only. Donations, if desired, for Acorns Children's Hospice.
Enid Mary Smith, formerly of Kinnersley, passed away on March the 10th, 2024, at Albion Lodge Residential Home, aged 98 years. Funeral service to be held at the Vale Crematorium, Flabbery, on Tuesday, April the 9th, 2024, at 12 noon. Family flowers only. Donations, if desired, are invited to Acorns Children's Hospice. Elizabeth Evelyn Watkins, formerly of Ceffinmore, Far Llandudno, Wales, passed away peacefully at Wildsfield Residential Home, Llandudno, Wales, on the 28th of February 2024, aged 88 years. Funeral service at the Church of St. Clair, Llanar, on Friday the 12th of April 2024 at 12 noon, followed by internment in St. Clair's churchyard. Family flowers only.
Janet Valerie Anderson. It is with sadness we announce the death of Janet Anderson at Rushwood Nursing Home on the 8th of March 2024. A short cremation service will be held at Worcester Crematorium, 10:45 a.m. on the 8th of April 2024, followed by a service of remembrance at 12:30 p.m. at Crowell Church. Family flowers only, please. Donations are invited to one of three charities, Action Aid, Royal British Legion or the Brook Hospital for Donkeys and Horses. Kathleen K. Shields of Prestwich Avenue passed away peacefully on the 17th of March 2024, aged 85 years. Funeral service at Worcester Crematorium on Friday the 5th of April at 3:15 p.m. Flowers or donations, if desired, for St. Richard's Hospice.